You're listening to The Signal Daily.
Hello, I'm Manaswini, your host for The Signal Daily podcast. This is the episode for 15th April 2024. For the first story, we are looking at Swiggy's two contrasting policies for its employees and its gig workers. And mind you, these two policies are causing quite a stir online. And for our main story, we talk about financial scams in India and the role of mule accounts. To talk more about this, we'll also be joined by Richard Booth, head of the Asia Pacific at BioCatch, which is a firm that specializes on behavioral biometric profiles of online users for fraud prevention. Stay tuned till the end. And as you can hear, I have a slight cold, so please listen to the rest of the episode with a forgiving ear. If you're a pet owner, you know how important it is to be there for your furry friend, especially when they're sick. Well, Swiggy gets it too. Just a couple days back, on National Pet Day, Swiggy launched something called a paternity policy for its staff. So besides their regular time off, all full-time employees at Swiggy can now take leave to welcome a new pet, tending to them during illness or even bereavement leave. Not only that, Swiggy also launched a new feature called Pawless. With this feature, if your pet goes missing, you can provide all the necessary details and a special team at Swiggy will help you find them. But turns out Swiggy's huge fleet of over 350,000 delivery partners aren't getting the same love. As per a report from Rest of World, gig workers risk losing their health insurance if they fail to meet their targets. Let me explain you how. Launched only last year, Swiggy rolled out a new system for its gig workers, which includes gold, silver, and bronze rankings. These ratings are based on how well and how much one works each week. The better the rating, the better the perks. It's like you'll be able to book shifts earlier and get better deals on personal loans. There's also health insurance in the list, but apparently it changes every week. So at the moment, delivery riders strive to earn at least 70 points weekly to stay in the gold category, securing health coverage for themselves and their families. Falling between 50 and 70 points lands them in silver, providing coverage for the worker alone, while scoring below 50 points places them in bronze, with insurance limited to only accidents. But this approach isn't new. Many companies have used similar methods to keep gig workers motivated and so-called productive. Take Amazon, for example. Back in 2021, during its big Diwali sales, it ran a month-long event called the Delivery Premier League, or DPL, for its part-time flex program workers. It was basically like a cricket tournament, but for delivery partners. So the more hours one spent delivering packages, the more points they scored. And those points in return could win them prizes like phones, bikes, TVs, and Amazon gift cards. But offering health insurance as part of these systems can actually do more harm than good. I mean, imagine losing your health insurance just because you haven't reached your monthly or weekly targets. And the thing is, up until 2023, Swiggy provided regular health insurance for all its registered workers, which means there was no point system. Everyone who worked for Swiggy would get health coverage. So now the big question is, why the change of heart? What's driving Swiggy's decision? Well, according to the Rest of World report, it all circles back to Swiggy's IPO plans. Experts believe this shift is part of cost-cutting measures as Swiggy prepares to go public very soon. But is it really fair to the gig workers? Because let's face it, they're already dealing with crazy long hours, barely making enough to cover expenses at home, plus there's added physical and mental stress. So while India's gig economy is set to skyrocket with the gig workforce expected to grow from 7.7 million in FY21, to a whopping 23.5 million by FY30, according to a NASSCOM report, gig workers aren't exactly thriving personally or professionally. For our second segment, we are going to bring you deep dives on stories from the world of technology, business, policy, and anything that leaves you with food for thought. You know, just the other day, I realized how so many people I know have been in situations where they either were scammed of their money or they received some kind of a scam call that nearly tricked them into sending money to fraudsters. That's how commonplace financial scams have become these days. It's either a fake delivery scam where a person calls you asking you to transfer money for something that you never ordered, or a QR code scam perhaps, maybe a Ponzi or a shopping scam, or somebody gets a call from a so-called banker or credit card company asking for KYC checks that require them to share OTPs, or a part-time job scam where fraudsters ask people to send some fees for a workshop. You take your pick. I mean, as India digitalizes itself, there are newer and more creative and innovative scams popping up every other day. It's hard to keep track of them all. For example, just the other day, it was reported that a lawyer from Bengaluru was not just duped of over rupees 14 lakh, but also made to strip on video for a narcotics test. The scamsters then tried to blackmail her with her video and tried to extort an additional rupees 10 lakh, after which she finally lodged a police complaint. Another report says that the Enforcement Directorate, or the ED, arrested the alleged kingpin of a syndicate that duped people of nearly rupees 5,000 crore through a series of cyber crimes. You'll find so many such reports if you just do a quick search on the internet. And a report by BioCatch, a Tel Aviv-based firm that specializes on behavioral biometric profiles of online users for fraud prevention, sheds more insights into how prevalent this problem is. So the 2024 Digital Banking Fraud Trends in India report, which was published earlier in February this year, says that 55% of all bank fraud cases reported in India are tied to the third-party account takeovers that involve unauthorized individuals taking over someone else's bank account, email account, or social media profile without the account owner's permission. These are called mule accounts that are used by fraudsters to collect or transfer ill-gotten funds. And these accounts play a big role in cybercrime. If you've watched the Netflix show called Jamtara, then you know what I'm talking about. The money is often rerouted several times through different accounts before it is withdrawn. So I called up Richard Booth, head of the Asia Pacific at BioCatch, to tell us more about what role mule accounts play in the fraud ecosystem.
So the research that BioCatch has done shows that mule accounts are critical to financial crime ecosystems, not just in India, but all over the world. If you think about bank robbery, the mule account is like the getaway car. There's no use me conducting a scam or a fraud if when I steal the money from that victim, I have nowhere to send that money and no way to get that money either out of the country or out of the bank system. So mules are very central and very critical to the financial crime ecosystem all over the world.
And, you know, just to give you a little more context around what Mr. Booth said about mule accounts, last year, six men, five from Kerala and one from Bengaluru, were arrested on charges of opening mule accounts in different banks. And guess how many mule accounts they were operating? 126. And can you guess how much money was passed through some of these mule accounts? At least rupees 18 million, according to BioCatch's estimates. So naturally, you'll ask, but why can't big banks flag these suspicious accounts? Well, it's not like scamsters are opening these accounts themselves. As the report points out, in India, mule accounts are being opened by legitimate Indian nationals who are selling off the use of the accounts or the accomplice persona, which makes the account harder to detect at onboarding, which is why banks had only reported 11% of these mule accounts. So I asked Mr. Booth two questions. Does illiteracy and lack of knowledge about how online transactions work make India more susceptible to financial scams? And if mule accounts are indeed so hard to spot, then what systems do we need in place to curb mule activity?
So I think to address your first question, based on the data that BioCatch sees about fraud and financial crime around the world, India is no more susceptible to mule accounts or financial scams than other countries. I think a lack of technical knowledge by customers is not something that's unique to India. We see in various populations of banking customers around the world, there are always some demographic of bank customers that are perhaps less familiar with technical elements of the modern digital banking experience. Education forms an important part of any bank's defense strategy. And I think India are doing a very good job at trying to educate their customers about the risks associated with fraud and scams. Bear in mind that fraud and scams, while they're made easier in a digital banking environment, doing branch-based banking doesn't eliminate fraud and scams at all. We've seen in places like America, for example, where customers are weary of digital payments, the scammers are now convincing victims to just draw cash from the ATM and put it in a FedEx box and send the cash in the mail to the scammer. So, you know, even outside of the digital channels, fraudsters and scammers still find a way to get victims' money. I think what India has done very well is have a very robust and strong KYC onboarding journey. So many, if not all, of the Indian banks that I've spoken to certainly have very strong and robust controls on the front door, meaning that combined with biometrics and Aadhaar identity checks, the banks are doing a very thorough job of KYC on the front door. The challenge presents itself in India, where criminals can either scam victims into providing access to their legitimate bank accounts and get them to use those accounts for muling, or in some cases actually pay the genuine customer, the genuine owner of the account, to give the criminal access to their account and thereby have the criminal use their account for muling or criminal activities. So I think when I compare India to other banks in other regions around the world, the main difference is India has a very strong controls on the front door, but criminals have found a way around that by targeting victims and asking them to either buy their accounts or rent their accounts.
Well, clearly, it's a cat and mouse chase. On that note, I also asked Mr. Boo to tell me about BioCatcher's mule account detection solution and how it tracks down certain patterns of activities in accounts with the help of machine learning.
One of the challenges that banks face in the modern era as the explosion of digital banking continues is the potential to lose the relationship with the customer. If you think back to branch-based banking, people had face-to-face interactions between the branch staff and the customer. But as the customers in the digital world get further and further away from the bank, the ability for the bank to understand what good and bad behavior looks like is an increasing challenge. What BioCatch offers its customers with our suite of behavioral biometric technologies is the ability to regain those intimate insights and details about what a customer is doing, and more importantly, how they're behaving when they do it. Specifically around mule account detection, we use our machine learning algorithms to identify when an account and the owner of an account is interacting through the banking app or through the internet banking in such a way that is indicative of a mule. In mule accounts, we don't see phishing or malware. We don't see the account being taken over. This isn't someone that's being scammed. The mule is someone that is using the account for money laundering, for criminal purposes.
Well, Indian banks are yet to try out such solutions on a larger scale. Until that happens, my advice is stay alert and don't share your OTPs. If you like listening to The Signal Daily, please show us some support. Rate and review us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. We'd love to hear what you have to say about this podcast. So feel free to shoot an email at hello@thesignal.co. The episode was researched, written and produced by Shortberry and me, Manaswini, edited by Venkat Anand, mastered and mixed by Yash Hirve. You can catch this podcast every morning on Spotify, Apple, Amazon Prime Music, Google Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcasts. We are thesignal.co on Instagram, LinkedIn and Twitter.